Halfway through the program, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuke, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us here in studio via text message. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome to the program Darren Shannon. You undoubtedly remember Darren Shannon as a former member of the Winnipeg Jets 1.0. He now joins us from his home in Ontario. Darren, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
How are you guys doing this morning?
Doing very well, Darren. How about yourself?
Good. Yeah, very good. Thanks.
You know, obviously, as a former member of the Winnipeg Jets, are you keeping an eye on what we call Jets 2.0, the second version of the team, since they moved here from Atlanta?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no, I really am. It's certainly always a team that I would follow anyways. But, you know, I know I played junior with Paul Maurice. So, you know, when you get to after having played in the NHL, you sort of you watch people as much as anything else. And for, on a personal end, Winnipeg is a spot that my wife's from Brandon. So we have some family in Winnipeg. It's always a spot that I was really, really excited and happy for the city when the team came back. Not surprised by the success that they've had, and so really, really, really happy and watch them. And quite honestly, no questions asked. They're the team that I would be cheering for and hoping does the best. And you know, I'm pretty excited for the city to see how things are going.
Darren, we want to still ask you about some of your memories of the whiteout and being a member of the Winnipeg Jets, but you're from Barrie, Ontario. We have to ask you about Mark Scheifele. He popped in another couple of goals yesterday, former member of the Barrie Colts of the Ontario Hockey League. Watching him and what he's been doing for the Jets, not just this year, but over the last several years, what stands out to you for a guy who's really been a dominant forward in the NHL the last several years?
Well, I mean, obviously the top-end players at the NHL level now, you know, you need to be able to create offense. And he's one of the, you know, one of the top, you know, call it 10, 15 players in the league that are able to generate offense. I mean, and not everybody's able to do that. Clearly not everybody. He's obviously a very, very great offensive player. But, you know, I don't know him on a personal end, but everything you hear and see is that he's a great person off the ice, great teammate. And, I mean, those are the other things that go over and above. But on a straight on-ice end, I mean, he's able to go out. He's able to create offense. He's able. Paul's using him on a PK, so he's out there on a penalty kill. He's out there on a power play, so he's clearly a top, you know, a top one, top two forward, able to be used in all scenarios. Creates offense, and then on top of that, you have somebody that's a great teammate, a great leader, which ultimately makes a person a whole package, and that's why you know a team, a city, falls in love with certain people, and obviously he's somebody that you guys. You know, you have, but that's the core of your team, guys like that and Wheeler and guys that are, you're able to count on as a coach on a day-to-day basis. And it's what you're able to build success off of.
Darren, during your time here in Winnipeg, you were able to experience three whiteouts with the Jets. And now you're seeing, of course, this whiteout again. Now we've seen it twice here since the Jets have returned. What kind of memories does that stir in you when you watch the fans on the television? You see the whiteout. Does it make you want to run to Chi-Chi's? Like, what memories does it bring back from your time here in Winnipeg?
Well, it's so a couple of things you say that is making you run around to Chi-Chi's. The interesting thing is my wife's actually going home next week. And so she's not necessarily a huge hockey fan. So she's got family in Brandon. She's got family in Winnipeg. And I actually said to her, I said, you know what? I said, no matter what, when the Jets are playing, go downtown. You don't even have to go to the game. Just go to one of the bars just to be around the city, to be around what's going on. I said, honest to God, you'll love it. And I actually was, you know, saying to her, I said, you know, I'd love to just fly in for the weekend. Don't even go to the game, just to go and be around the city. Cause that's, I mean, that to me is the coolest part about Winnipeg. It's a hardcore hockey city, and it is just a great, great experience to be around the city. When they're experiencing what they're experiencing now, but on a personal end, what I certainly do remember, you know, with the whiteout. I mean, I had my family came in, I had friends come in during the playoffs, and that's one of those experiences that they all still cherish and love and talk about themselves. But, you know, from my perspective as a player, what I do remember was the old rink in Winnipeg where our dressing room was, you know, call it 15 feet. Our bench was 15 feet from the dressing room. And the dressing room itself was right below the stands. And so before warm-up even started, you know, the warm-up probably was 75% full. The capacity was probably 75% full, and the drums going and the cheering and the clapping and the, you know, people screaming and yelling. And, you know, we're sitting there before the game, and chills are going through your body before you even get out on the ice and you get out to warm-up. It was just, it was a really, really cool, exciting experience to be part of. And it's something that as a player, you know, and, you know, now I'm old and out of hockey and all that kind of stuff, not playing, but you can't forget that. It's just one of those special things in life that, you know, will be something I'll always carry with me. And the, when the Jets played their first playoff series there a couple of years ago, Anaheim, my wife and I sat down, and again, she's not necessarily a huge hockey fan, but we both sat down and watched the game just to see and experience it from afar on TV, just to see the whiteout and the experience. And it brings, obviously, Breck, tons of memories on my end. But you know, going out for warm up or going out for the game, the crowd, it's just, oh, it's an amazing experience. And, you know, it's a tribute to the city for sure.
Our guest is Darren Shannon, former member of the Winnipeg Jets 1.0. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Darren, not to conjure up some negative memories, but I have to go back to that 1992 playoff series against the Vancouver Canucks. The Jets are a decided underdog against the Canucks. Yet, you know, the team takes a 3-1 lead. They're on the verge of an epic upset, or potentially an epic upset. And then, of course, the Canucks end up blowing the Jets out with three consecutive games. 8-2, 8-3, and then 5-0. What switched between the, you know, game 4 and game 5 in that playoff series, if you remember back then?
Yeah, it's funny. I probably would have a better handle on at the time what I thought, but I don't even know if I really knew what switched. I mean, I can say this: they clearly came out with a different mindset as to how they were going to go about it. And, you know, I don't really know, because I know we felt good. I know we thought we had a legitimate chance. Obviously, we were up 3-1. And then, you know, obviously, we let ourselves get off the rails a little bit, and they got some momentum, and we weren't able to get it back. It was a very, very disappointing time, going through it, living through it, because, you know, that was early in my career, and I didn't really even realize how challenging it was to win in the playoffs, how challenging it is to get through a series. And obviously, I don't have an answer for you. I wish I did. I wish I did at the time. But it's still one of those things that really does sting when your hockey career is over. You look back at opportunities, and that was an opportunity that we weren't able to capitalize on.
You know, Darren, sticking with the Jets and Canucks, and as opposed to Drew's question, this isn't negative. This is positive. I don't know if you were aware of this, but when Mark Scheifele scored a couple of goals in the first round against the Wild, he was actually the first player since you in 1993, when you scored two goals against the Canucks in Game 5. He was the first player in Jets franchise history to score a couple of goals since yourself. I'm not sure if you were aware of that.
I was not aware of that, and there's not many scoring stats that I would be the last guy of, but I did not know that.
That was April 27th, 1993. You scored two goals against the Canucks in Game 5.
Oh, I do remember the game. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying I don't remember it. I just would never have thought that I was. Oh. I would never have thought that with Solani, Kachuk, and those guys, I wouldn't have believed that I was the last guy. But anyway, that's cool. I mean, and at the same time, I mean, here's hoping as they go forward to the next. Next game, I'm here's hoping that there's going to be some more of that. Somebody's going to get three goals here in the next little bit. I did not know that. It's kind of neat to hear, but I do remember the game for sure. We ended up coming back winning 4-3 in overtime. Timo scored in overtime that game, but I did not know that.
Now, Darren, watching Connor Hellebuyck make 46 saves or 47 saves against the Nashville Predators last night, did that bring back memories of Nikolai Habibulin making 51 saves in Detroit back in 1996?
I knew that's what you were going to ask. I do remember that game, absolutely. The Bulin wall. Yeah, no, that particular game. I would venture to say that last night, as much as Nashville had a ton of shots, and they did, and they're certainly a very good team as well, I bet you that we gave up more quality chances than last night. I mean, obviously, you know, Hellebuyck was great last night, and they're going to continue to need him to be able to do that and stand on his head But they do a pretty good job of blocking shots. I think just watching the game last night, I think I heard them say they also blocked 25 shots last night as well. So I definitely do remember that game that Nick stood on his head and we ended up winning that game. But it was certainly felt like we were under siege more than it felt like they were under siege last night, even though Nashville obviously had a ton of shots and had played a very good game. And Winnipeg will need Hellebuyck to do the same thing again. It didn't feel like the game was out of control per se. It was just, you know, they're a good team and they got some chances and they got some more shots on that.
And Darren, what was it like playing with your brother Daryl, who played three seasons with the Winnipeg Jets? You know, it's an opportunity not a lot of guys get to do at the NHL level. So what did it mean to you to get a chance to play with your brother in Winnipeg?
Well, it's like everything. I guess when you're young, you maybe don't appreciate things as much as you could or should. I mean, I do remember thinking it was really awesome. It was really cool to do. But, you know, I probably appreciate it more now as our career was ending, as our career was done, than at the time. I mean, we grew up in a small town, so we played together growing up. And then we, you know, even in junior, we played together in Windsor playing in junior. Then we played together in the NHL. So it was probably at the time it was like, oh, hey, that's just kind of what happens. But obviously, as we get going and you go through your life and you get older, and now I don't see him that often just because where he lives and where I live. So life happens, and then you realize, oh, wow, what a special moment, what a special thing we were able to do. And that's, you know, I mean, out of the game for 20 years, you realize just how special it is to play in the NHL, let alone to be able to do it with a family member, with a brother. And, you know, we were both there, and the team went to Finland the one year, and my mom and dad got to go with us. Everybody's allowed to take one person. So being able to just those kind of life experiences, that able to be part of it with your brother, with your family, was really kind of special. And it's certainly one that I look back on now and probably have a better appreciation for it than I did at the time, just maybe dumb and young and not paying attention to it as much as I probably should have, I guess.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our guest is former Winnipeg Jets player Darren Shannon, taking a little bit of a walk down memory lane, reminiscing about his career as a member of, well, first the Buffalo Sabres, then the Winnipeg Jets, and then, of course, the Phoenix Coyotes.
Darren, I know you were here for the Heritage Classic back in 2016, but do you still keep in touch with a lot of the former Jets that you used to play with?
I don't see a ton of the guys. I don't keep in touch all that much. I mean, Chris King and I, he lives in the area, the same area that I am. And so there's a group of us that skate together quite regularly in Newmarket. And Chris King is there, and Luciano Borsato is there. Dale Howard Chuck's in Barry. So I certainly see that sort of group of guys periodically, or quite often, I guess. But otherwise, not so much. I mean, as you get on with life, have family. I mean, I certainly go to some of the, you know, charity events and go to some golf tournaments and some of the hockey tournaments. But other than that, I mean, I'm just a dad and got a job and you go about your day-to-day life. I think the guys that are still in the hockey world that are, you know, in some capacity certainly would be in much more contact with guys than on my end, for sure.
Darren, we'll let you go on this last question. You mentioned at the outset of the interview that you used to be a junior teammate with Paul Maurice back playing for the Windsor Spitfires sort of in the late 80s there. What do you remember about Paul Maurice sort of as a young player? We know that his career sort of fizzled out quickly, but he made the quick transition into being a assistant coach and then a head coach. What do you remember as Paul Maurice as a junior hockey player?
Well, it's interesting. I've said this lots of times since, and if you were to ask me that everybody that I played with, certainly in junior for sure, who I would think would be a coach, Paul would be that guy. He was our captain. He was not our most talented player by any means, but he was a true leader. There's not many guys that, you know, when I think, look back now at 17, 18, 19, it's really hard to be a leader at that stage because the separation's only a couple years, and who at 17, 18 is really looking to listen to another 19-year-old tell you what to do or to, you know, give you crap in a dressing room or whatever the case was. But I specifically remember a game we played in Sudbury and we were on a losing streak, and, you know, Paul actually stepped up and was a true, true leader, head of players only meeting, went around the room and positive, negative, you know, all the stuff that a coach may do. And he did that as a 19-year-old. There's not that many, as I look back now, there's not many 19-year-olds that are able to be confident enough, respected enough in a room to be able to talk to other 19-year-olds and other 18-year-olds and other 17-year-olds that also think they're good players and whether they are or not. and able to do that and not be the best player on the team. And so it does not surprise me at all the success he's had. And quite honestly, the year we went to the Memorial Cup, he was our captain, and partway through that year, we had Pat Szymanski came back as a goalie, and we only allowed two overages. And so partway through that year is the year he started coaching. It was Christmas time, and he went from one day being our captain to the next day being our assistant coach. And that was the start of his coaching career. But again, that's not a transition many people could make and do it seamlessly and have the success they have. And he's one of the few guys that I could say that does not surprise me at all. He truly is a leader. He truly is. I mean, you see him. He's how well spoken he is, how good he is with the media. And he's a natural. And obviously, happy for his success and not surprised by it either.
Darren Shannon is a former member of the Winnipeg Jets 1.0. He joins us from his home in Southern Ontario. Darren, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much for this walk down memory lane. And really, you know, like, thanks for all the memories.
Oh, no, hey, good. I'm really, really cheering for the Jets. I hope they do awesome, and good luck, and thank you guys.
Thanks very much, Darren. Take care. When we come back, we talk about the NHL draft lottery. Which team deserves to win the lottery the most? It takes place tonight. The answer is not the Edmonton Oilers. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
The first overall selection in the 2017 NHL draft belongs to the New Jersey Devils. Ray Shero accepts congratulations.
I love the ridiculousness of the draft lottery.
You mean the way this year? The manner in which they're doing it?
Well, I haven't even gone to that. I just talked about, like, they make it out to be, like, the world's most dramatic reveal, like, in the history there.
Well, it was quite a juxtaposition of music there. It was, like, a little bit of upbeat, and then it was also the dramatic, so...
Yeah.
It was quite interesting.
I love
the draft lottery.
The whole thing is so ridiculous. This year, it's even stepping up the ridiculousness to a whole other level.
Right.
They're announcing the first, I guess... The picks 15
to three, or four.
15 through 4 are being announced during the pregame show tonight, and then they're waiting till the second intermission to announce teams 3, 2, and 1.
Well, Drew, the only thing in their defense I would say is if you don't want to actually have any analysis during the game, then,
this is a perfect way of doing it.
Yeah, just avoid it.
The Bruins Lightning game on in the afternoon?
Well, because NBC wants an afternoon game, and then tonight is the Sharks Golden Knights game.
No. I understand why the networks want it.
Well, that's all that matters. You know that. I mean, the only thing that matters. You're saying why isn't it a doubleheader tonight?
Yes.
Because NBC needs afternoon programming, and NBC is, you know, the NHL, I'm sure, is mandated or contractually obligated to give NBC an afternoon game both today and tomorrow. And that's why tomorrow afternoon's game is the Penguins and the Capitals, and then the Jets and the Predators for game two will go after that game tomorrow afternoon.
Is the game on the Golf Channel?
Probably, unless it gets preempted. The best will be next week when it's Kentucky Derby week. And the game goes into overtime, and then they have to cut away from the game on NBC.
And to go to Seabiscuit.
To go to the pregame show coverage or the pre-horse race coverage.
Who's going to win the Kentucky Derby this year?
The good news is, though, is that Eddie Olchuk, who is a horse
aficionado.
Could actually very seamlessly transition from doing hockey analysis to...
I don't think he even does the hockey analysis next Saturday.
You're ruining my transition there, Drew.
Well, sorry, but I mean,
Jacks don't matter, Drew.
He's just on the horse race for next Saturday's Kentucky Derby.
Is there going to be some slop, Drew?
The mutter was a mutter. But unfortunately, the horse called Gronkowski, or Gronk, I think, has been a scratch from the Kentucky Derby, so he's no longer able to run.
Nothing will ever top your wedding in 2012 when our very good friend Neil Rockman was pooped on by a bird.
Right before the race.
Right before
the race.
Which
is a good sign.
Is a good luck.
Yeah, and, good luck.
And then we won the race.
And the best part is Rocky had no idea that there was bird poop on his glasses.
I don't know how. I mean, it was pretty obvious. But anyways.
Do you think there are people at the racetrack that, like, try to purposely get pooed on?
I doubt it. It's sort of hard to target a bird to get, you know, to stand in the proper spot. But
Dave likes the horses.
Dave is a big horse.
I am a big Assiniboine Downs. It's a good way to spend a summer evening.
Shout out to Darren Dunn.
Exactly, and the guys at the Assiniboine Downs. So let's talk about the draft lottery. It goes tonight tonight is part of the pregame show, and then the second intermission lack of analysis will be tonight. What team, quote unquote, deserves to win the draft lottery the most? Do you have an answer?
Yeah, it's a really good question.
Okay. Buffalo's got the best odds.
There's absolutely no answer. I mean, Buffalo, as you just mentioned, Drew, Buffalo has the best odds.
18.5%.
Right, 18.5%. And those odds aren't good, even though they did give better odds this year as opposed to last year.
They seem to they tweak it every year.
Right, and then you have Ottawa next. But, I mean, Buffalo Sabres, I mean, they could definitely use Rasmus Dahlin, but
yeah,
so could the Senators, especially if they're not going to have Erik Karlsson going forward.
Seems
look
like
at the Arizona Coyotes, Oliver Ekman-Larsson. I mean, he might be on his way out. I mean, the Montreal Canadiens, I mean, Andrei Markov, Mikhail Sergachev, they could definitely use a defenseman like Rasmus Dahlin to replace Markov and Svechnikov, pardon me, not Svechnikov, he's a
Sergachev.
Sergachev.
Yeah.
So, I mean, a lot of these teams could use Rasmus Dahlin, Vancouver Canucks. I mean, you look at the Chicago Blackhawks. What have we talked about? They could really use a top four defenseman. So I think any of the 15 teams in the draft lottery right now could use a defenseman like Rasmus Dahlin. But what I think is really interesting is last year both New Jersey and Philadelphia moved up significantly
sure.
to go 1-2, right?
And so, both teams made the playoffs this year.
I mean, there's more of a chance, Dave, that Buffalo doesn't get the pick as opposed to gets the pick. And that's what I love about this. I mean, Edmonton Oilers at in the 9 spot right now have a 5% chance.
Well,
if they end up getting the first overall pick, I think there's going to be like riots across the country.
I think even people in Edmonton would reject that at that point. They'd be like, listen, this is ridiculous. We can't keep having this kind of this level of success.
It's embarrassing to the NHL that they don't put a system in place that discourages or disallows a team to be successful by sucking so badly.
Well, they've tried to. That's the whole point, is that they've tried to tweak it to such that you can't have, you know, that by failing, you're not necessarily getting yourself the best chance to be in that spot.
Dave, you know, a team that I think is really interesting going into this draft lottery tonight is the New York Islanders.
Sure.
Right? With the two picks, one of which they acquired from the Calgary Flames in the Travis Hamonic trade. So they've got a chance of 3.5% for their first pick and then 2.5% for their pick that came from the Flames. So you put those together, I mean, I know it doesn't equal this, you know, directly, but you know, they have a 6% chance at getting the first overall pick. But at the very least, they're going to get two picks in the top 15. And the Islanders are a team right now we know are kind of going sideways. John Tavares, we're not sure if he's going to re-sign there. But boy, if they could get the first overall pick and get Rasmus Dahlin, that would be pretty nice.
I got to think that he'd look pretty good in Detroit. I'm not going to give Detroit my dark horse, opportunity to take Dahlin. And
they have a bit of a history of having
Swedish defensemen in Detroit kind of go hand in hand. So I think that if Detroit got him, it would be a poetic justice.
Detroit fifth overall with 8.5% odds. It's sort of funny that, you know, teams like Detroit, who of course had Nicklas Lidström for so many years as the anchor on their back end, and teams like Ottawa and Arizona, who might be losing their superstar Swedish defenseman sooner rather than later, Erik Karlsson and you mentioned Oliver Ekman-Larsson, might be able to replace those players with the next great Swedish superstar defenseman in Rasmus Dahlin. Because he's far and away the number one overall pick. You remember last year at this time, Nolan Patrick was sort of expected to be the number one overall pick, ended up being Nico Hischier, and Patrick went 2 to the Philadelphia Flyers. There's no chance of that happening with this draft lottery. Everyone knows that this is just the draft, that you win it, you draft Rasmus Dahlin, and you shake hands with all your scouts and you say thank you very much.
Sure, but there's some other good players. I mean, Evgeny Svechnikov is a really good player. He's expected to go second or third overall. You've got Brady Tkachuk, the second Tkachuk son that's going to be drafted, right? Philip Zadina, some scouts think he could go second overall. Mm-hmm. At the very least, he's going to go top 5. Drew, another team that I wanted to throw in there, this is a very interesting wrinkle. Even though St. Louis only has the second worst chances of getting the pick, meaning 1.5% chance, if they get a top 3 pick, so not just number 1, but if they get number 2 or number 3,
right,
they can keep that pick. But if they don't get a top 3 pick, they lose that pick to the Philadelphia Flyers because that was part of the Braden Schenn trade.
It's lottery protected.
Right.
Exactly right. So remember, the lottery is, it used to be that the lottery was just for the first overall pick.
Right.
Now the lottery is for any of the top 3 picks, which is what happened last year with the Flyers jumping up all the way to number 2. They were, I think, 13th or 14th when they were slotted based on their odds. With St. Louis, they owe that pick to the Flyers as part of the Braden Schenn trade. But if it's a top 3 pick, which is quite unlikely, a 1.5% odds there, if it ends up there, they can hold on to the pick. Otherwise, it belongs to the Flyers. You know, New York Islanders, as to your point, they have a lot of power in this draft, given that, you know, they say that, you know, there's a gap between Dahlin and then everybody else.
Yep.
But then after that, it's sort of wide open, but it's thought of as to be a pretty deep draft when it comes to first round selections. You know, there might not be a huge disparity between second overall and say 10th overall, but if anytime you can end up with two picks potentially in the top 10 or close to the top 10, you can reshape your lineup if you do those picks well. We see with the Bruins, it's taken them a little bit of time, but they are starting to reap the rewards of that draft year where they had, what is it, 13, 14, and 15 all in a row?
Yeah, and Jake DeBrusque is looking pretty good right now.
That's
maybe not
point.
So much the other players,
yeah.
But you know, what about the Dallas Stars? They're hosting the draft this year. They only have 2% chance of winning the lottery, but they'd obviously love to have the first overall pick. I think, guys, this is setting up to be a really fascinating draft with all of these picks, and we haven't seen a top pick traded in a long time. And I'm not saying that I think the first overall pick is going to be traded. I think whoever gets the first overall pick is taking Rasmus Dahlin, because all scouts, including Craig Button, say he is going to be a generational player, maybe the best player to come around since defenseman, I should say, since Nicklas Lidström and Erik Karlsson. I mean, he is in that vein. I mean, he absolutely tore up the Swedish league with Frölunda. So, I mean, he is in that same vein as Austin Matthews or Connor McDavid, Patrick Laine, as being a generational player. So I'm just saying I wouldn't be surprised if at the draft we see maybe that second pick, the third pick, traded, just because I think you have a lot of franchises right now that are looking to make a big splash and maybe trade a first round pick to acquire a certain player. And I think, you know, the Islanders with two picks in the top 15, I wouldn't be surprised if a team like the Islanders maybe moves one of those picks to acquire an asset.
Want to give a shout out before we go to break to a friend or a listener named Jason Morantz. He listens to us in London, England. He tweeted at us earlier in the
Morantz Burger.
The Morantz Burger from Salty.
Which, for the record, by the way, breaking news. Maybe not breaking news,
okay.
It opened on Friday.
Oh, there you go. Salty's is open out of Winnipeg Beach. But he tweeted at us, this is going back a couple weeks ago, saying, I'm a former Winnipegger and love your show. Helps me keep on top of the Winnipeg Jets. I ran the London Marathon today and hit the wall. To get me through, I listened to the podcast of yesterday's show.
I hope he's okay.
Because he hit the wall?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's very clever. Please shout me out on the air. So basically, if you're ever running a marathon and you're using a legal curve to fight through the adversity and finish that marathon, tweet at us and we'll give you a shout out on air. So shout out to Jason Morantz listening to us in London, England. Congratulations for successfully running the London Marathon. When we come back, we're going to shift our focus a little bit to the Western Hockey League playoffs. We're going to be joined by Sean Mullen, the Swift Current Broncos broadcaster. Their best of seven playoff series tied 2 games apiece. Game 5 goes tonight. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290. Hour number 3 of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, our Instagram page with some great shots from the first round series against the Wild, from last night's party inside the arena, and of course from the runway party before and after every Jets game, is available Instagram.com/illegalcurve, and our website with the latest Jets and Moose news and audio is illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to be joined on the program by Sean Mullen. Sean is the broadcaster for the Swift Current Broncos. They're in the midst of an Eastern Conference playoff series against the Lethbridge Hurricanes. Series is tied 2 games apiece with Game 5 going tonight in Swift Current. Sean, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Our pleasure. Sean, as I mentioned, 2-2 between the Broncos and the Hurricanes thus far, 4 games in, best of 3 at this point in time. You know, from your perspective, what's been the series like through the first 4 games? Swift Current winning both at home, Lethbridge coming back to win both at home. Is home ice advantage that important in this series, or is that just sort of an aberration right now?
I don't know. It's been kind of a strange series, honestly. From a Swift Current perspective, the Broncos played 2 series against rivals, heated rivals, that went 7 games, Regina in the first round, Moose Jaw in the second round, that had been kind of building up all year, and it really took a bite out of them, I think, those 2 series. I mean, they had to battle tooth and nail that Moose Jaw series. They went overtime 3 times, 1, 2, and 3 periods of overtime in 3 of those games. And by the time they got to the Lethbridge series, it almost felt at the beginning like, oh, what now? You know, we were building to that Moose Jaw series for so long. That was the ultimate rivalry, the ultimate battle in the Eastern Conference. And the kind of public perception was, oh, okay, well, now you're going to the league final. And I don't think the team necessarily took Lethbridge lightly, but there just was a strange feeling to start the series where there wasn't that same level of intensity at the beginning in the crowd or on the ice. And Lethbridge kept it real close in games one and two, but Swift Current found a way to win those games. Didn't play their best hockey, but played well enough to win. And then they lost their captain, Glenn Godden, and they lost their one of their top two defensemen, in Archie Manulin, and they went into Lethbridge against a team that's playing with confidence and that has nothing to lose and, you know, quote-unquote wasn't supposed to be here. And the Hurricanes came out flying in both games three and four. Well, the Broncos were flat and had moments where they played well, but really overall didn't have the level of intensity they need, didn't have the pushback they need, and looked frustrated, at times looked tired. And I think these 2 days off on Thursday and Friday were real key for a team that needs to kind of reset itself right now, because they've just played the worst stretch of hockey they've had in at least a month and all throughout the playoffs, and need to get back to their game, because, you know, no one's handing them a trip to the WHL final, even though Lethbridge isn't as good as overall in the regular season or depth-wise as Moose Jaw and Regina were. They're playing excellent hockey right now, and the Broncos aren't.
Now, Sean, Tyler Steenbergen's had quite the year so far, scores the game-winning goal at the 2018 World Junior Championships for Team Canada, and he's leading the Swift Current Broncos right now with 11 goals in 18 games. Is it obvious to say that throughout the remainder of this series, Tyler Steenbergen is going to be crucial and his goals are going to be crucial for the Swift Current Broncos?
Yes, certainly. I mean, they need him to keep contributing the way that he has, but I think for the Broncos, if you look at the series so far, A, they had to stay out of the penalty box, which, I mean, they took 10 penalties in game four. And I know they've taken five or six a game sometimes, or four or five, but 10 is completely unsustainable. And yeah, I thought they played well early in game four, but all the time in the penalty box completely derailed that. And while Steenbergen has scored, they only have one goal from Beck Malenstein, who was a 30-goal scorer at this level. Mateo hasn't scored yet in this series. They need more offense from everybody. You know, Caden Elder hasn't got in on the scoring. Colby Sissons on the blue line hasn't had a goal yet. So, you know, they've got a goal from Steenbergen, but they need more than that from him in this series overall. They've got a couple from Heponiemi. They're missing Godden. So other players have to step up and contribute offensively. It's got to be spread around. And this is a team that should never go two games like that, only scoring one in each game. So they've got to find themselves a little bit here, and maybe a couple days to regroup was what they needed.
You know, Sean, one main name you just mentioned was Mateo Gennaro, and he's a player that fans around here will be familiar with because he was a 2015 seventh-round pick by the Jets, someone they chose not to sign last year. Do you think he came over from Calgary to the Swift Current Broncos? Do you think that lights a fire under a player when they kind of, you know, a perceived slight by a National Hockey League team? Do you think that did something for Mateo's season this year?
Well, it can't help but light a fire a little bit for a player. You know, I can tell you as an example, Glenn Godden, who recently signed with Calgary, well, back in the fall with Calgary, said it was a huge motivating factor for him in coming back and playing his best hockey when St. Louis didn't sign him and opened the door for a contract with the Calgary Flames. For Mateo, I mean, he's a great goal scorer. He has 40 goals this year. He had 40 goals last year. He's got an excellent shot. He can do a lot of things. He can play a physical game. I don't know. I haven't spoken to him specifically, to be honest with you, about how he felt in responding to not signing with Winnipeg, but he's got an NHL-quality shot, and he's a guy who I'm sure is looking at opportunities once this season is done and what can come. He's a very mature young man. He lost his best friend in the Humboldt bus crash and had the maturity and the poise to speak in front of, you know, millions of people potentially watching the tributes and watching the service for his best friend Stephen Lack, and did so in an amazingly composed and mature way. So he's a young man I have a lot of time for, but, you know, it didn't work out in Winnipeg, and there's 30 other options for him.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our guest is Swift Current Broncos broadcaster Sean Mullen. Sean, you mentioned the Humboldt Broncos bus crash, and that, of course, touched the hockey world deeply and continues to resonate to this day. It probably didn't touch nearly, you know, the impact was felt certainly as much or if not more in Swift Current, which, of course, had its own tragic bus crash back in the 1980s. You know, how did the bus crash in Humboldt affect the team, the organization in swift current?
Well, I think, and I guess certainly there's people in swift current who lived through what happened and, you know, drive by that monument and see the four-leaf clover that represents the four young men who were lost in 1986, that, you know, it carries a little extra special meaning because of that. But almost any team in hockey, especially in Western Canada, impacted, A, by just the feeling that, you know, they know what it's like to be on that bus. They can picture what it's like to be on that bus. So, you know, those boys are like them. That staff is like them. And B, for the Broncos specifically and other teams, you know, the hockey world is small. These guys train together. They come from similar places. You know, I mentioned Mateo losing one of his best friends, Stephen Wack. There's several players on the Broncos who were close to players that passed away on that bus crash, growing up in the same area, training for the same people. And you just, it's such a small community that way. So it really was tough on them. It was tough on the other teams that were going through the playoffs at the same time. And I know they spent a lot of time, the organization did, working with the kids to make sure those young men had the counseling they needed and the support they needed while they were going through that, and still are going through dealing with that tragedy.
Now, Sean, we wanted to ask you about a couple of former members of the Swift Current Broncos, obviously one of them which is currently playing for the Winnipeg Jets, but I wanted to specifically ask you about Jake DeBrusque. He's absolutely tearing it up for the Bruins in the playoffs. He had a great regular season as well, but 5 playoff goals in 7 games. You got to watch him for 3 years with the Swift Current Broncos. Have you just had a big smile on your face watching DeBrusque and what he's been able to do in his rookie year?
Now, DeBrusque is an awesome story. I remember when he was drafted in the Bantam draft, Swift Current took him in the 7th round. He weighed, I think, 120 pounds. He was like 5'4". And people are looking at this saying, what the heck? You know, there's no way this guy will be big enough to play at this level. And, you know, the Broncos, at the time, their general manager, Mark Lamb, had a relationship with Louis DeBrusque. And Louis was convinced that there was major growth spurts coming for his son. And it came, and he always had great ability with the puck, but the thing that I noticed the most about him, even though he wasn't the biggest guy, was that grit and determination to go to the tough areas to score. And as he gained some size and he had great hands and became a better and better skater, that grit and determination to go to the tough areas didn't go away. You're still seeing it now. You know, I watched the first round of the NHL playoffs, and he's not one of the biggest guys out there, but he still parks himself in front of the net, redirects pucks, and he scored 40 goals in his 18-year-old season in Swift Current, and I can't tell you how many of them were just parked right in front of the net. He plays that hard game, but he's also very skilled, and when you can combine those things together and have that determination he has, he's proved people wrong so many times. I remember when he was drafted by the Bruins mid-first round, people kind of shook their head and said, oh, it's way too early. Well, no one's saying that now after 5 goals in the first round.
Sean, the other player that we have to ask about, of course, is one a little closer to Winnipeg, is Adam Lowry. What have you thought about Adam Lowry's development since his time with the Swift Current Broncos? And do you still maintain a connection to these veteran players who go on and play in the NHL or the AHL or at any level, really?
Well, they're pretty busy guys. So, I mean, I'm sure they're classy young men that if I had a reason to reach out to them, then I probably could, but I generally let those guys carry about their business. But Adam Lowry is a player who I love to watch closely, certainly, because I don't know if I've seen a player have a better season. Glenn Gauden, maybe this year, is an example sort of comparable to what Lowry had when he was the 4 Bronco Memorial Trophy winner as the league MVP. And Lowry was a great story here, too. You know, he came in at 16 years of age, made the team kind of surprisingly as a guy who had only played minor midget the year before. His skating wasn't great. You know, he looked sort of like he'd be a lumbering power forward winger type guy. And nobody worked harder to get better than Adam Lowry did. His skating improved leaps and bounds throughout his time in Swift Current. Mark Lamb moved him to the center ice position and believed that his size, strength, and intelligence would serve him in that spot, and it took a while to adjust. It took a while for him to become a reasonable face-off man, and it turned out to be a wonderful move, and that is where he played as the MVP, and there was no better player in the league when Adam Lowry was 19 years of age and what Lowry could do at all ends of the ice and how he could just impose his will on a game. And he just worked so hard to improve the areas of his game that needed to improve. And that's continued from what I've seen in the National Hockey League. He's a guy who, you know, has worked for everything he's gotten. And just because his name is the same as someone who played in the NHL before, he's worked just as hard or harder as anyone else who's got to the position that he's gotten to. And it's great to see him having success and being such a key cog. And I'm not surprised that he's exactly the kind of playoff warrior that a team like Winnipeg needs right now.
Sean Mullen is the play-by-play voice for the Swift Current Broncos. The Broncos and the Lethbridge Hurricanes. Game 5 goes tonight in the best-of-7 series. Sean, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, thank you for calling, and go Jets.
And go Broncos right back at you, Sean. Thanks again.
Thanks.
When we come back, we look at the other 3 playoff series. Believe it or not, there's other playoff series going on in the Stanley Cup playoffs. We'll look at the Golden Knights Sharks, Game 2 tonight, the Penguins Capitals, and then the start of the Lightning Bruins series. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
Great chance for Nate Schmidt. Out of the corner, Perron. Back again, Brayden McNabb. His shot.
Vegas was off and running right over the San Jose Sharks. 7-0. The Golden Knights absolutely destroying the San Jose Sharks in a scintillating performance by the Vegas Golden Knights. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live here on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by our good friends at Keener Jerseys. Specializing in customization services and branded team apparel, Keener Jerseys is changing the game with world-class craftsmanship and unparalleled service. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want personalized, visit KeenerJerseys.com or check out their showroom at 982 Portage Avenue. That's the corner of Portage and Sherburn. Tell them that Illegal Curve sent you. 3 other playoff series, 2 of the 3 are underway. The Golden Knights, as I mentioned, lambasting the San Jose Sharks 7-0. The Sharks look to get back on track tonight in Vegas. The other series still to start, that'll be this afternoon. The Tampa Bay Lightning have been sitting waiting for the Boston Bruins for about a week now. They finished off the Devils in 5 games. The Bruins obviously went 7 with the Leafs. That ended on Wednesday. So
I thought we were talking about the Golden Knights Sharks series.
I'm going to recap the 3 series and then circle back to the top one.
Okay.
And then the other series, of course, is the Penguins and the Capitals. Capitals looked like they had that game in hand. They had a 2-0 lead. Of course, the Penguins come back. They win that first game 3-2. Game 2 in that series goes tomorrow afternoon. So circling back to the Golden Knights Sharks series, 7-0 Vegas over the Sharks. In
just
first,
as we all predicted,
the
Drew.
Sharks gave up, I think, what, 4 goals in the entire first round, and then they end up giving up 7 in the first game.
And one goal was called; it was disallowed.
Right, and they gave up 4 goals in the first 10 minutes of that game. I mean, this Golden Knights story continues to get more and more dramatic. But is that a blip? With the Golden Knights did to the Sharks,
or I have no idea.
You don't know. You've given up altogether.
Any time that you take the Golden Knights lightly, they go out and they prove you wrong. And what was amazing to me about that game is obviously Marc-Andre Fleury picks up another shutout.
Yes.
But the top line of Jonathan Marchessault, William Karlsson, Riley Smith was great. But it was actually the second line of Eric Halla, James Neal, and Alex Tuck that did more damage. They had goals from 7 different players, Drew. So it's not like all of the offense is coming from 1 or 2 players or 1 or 2 lines, and that was the case for the Golden Knights all year long, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the Golden Knights do have scoring depth, and for me, the advantage that the Sharks had going into the series is I think that their defense is better than the Golden Knights group of defensemen, and when you look at the goaltenders, I think it's a wash. Martin Jones was phenomenal in the first round against Anaheim, and Marc-Andre Fleury was great in the first round against LA, but I think what we're seeing, guys, is that speed is killing, and the Golden Knights are getting out to early leads, and they're capitalizing, and they're coming in waves. And you look at, the first couple of goals, Cody Eakin, his goal is on a rebound, and Eric Halla's goal is off of the rush. It's a nice shot that beats Martin Jones, and you're down 2-0 very early on in an arena which is extremely hostile. I mean, we know that the Golden Knights have some of the best fans in the NHL, and I think it's intimidating for other teams to go into that arena, and we saw it all throughout the regular season. LA was not successful in Vegas. I mean, they couldn't score any goals, and I think this game really shocked the San Jose Sharks, because both of these two teams were off for a considerable amount of time.
Yeah.
What was it, 8 days?
Something like that.
That the Golden Knights were off, and then the Sharks were off for 7 days. And I mean, it's only one game here, but they're not going to have Evander Kane in for game two because he's been suspended for cross-checking Pierre-Edward Belmar. So now the Sharks have to win game two without one of their top players.
Do you agree with the suspension, Dave? Did you think that was worthy of a suspension?
Yeah, no. I mean, he came in. Belmar wasn't even paying attention. Didn't know he was even coming.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it was the most vicious thing we've ever seen, but the reality is that
it's
a cross-check to the head. I mean, it's absolutely a one-game suspension.
What about Pittsburgh and Washington? I mean, Washington looked like they had that game in hand. They're playing at home. You know, they have a 2-0 lead. Everything's going their way. And then just like that, a flip, a poor decision by Ovechkin with a pass, and it's the Crosby show, and it's 3-2 final for the Penguins, and they take that 1-0 series lead over the Capitals. This Penguins team just, they don't quit, and Sidney Crosby is a machine.
Yeah, and, you know, I thought Chris Letang was excellent in Game 1 as well, and I think everybody was saying after that Pittsburgh win, here we go again, you know, Penguins are going to beat the Capitals, but it is only one game, and the Capitals do still have, you know, the game at home coming up next. They don't have home ice advantage anymore, but Game 2 is at home. And, you know, the Capitals, I think, you know, they have to be scratching their heads and wondering, what do we have to do to beat this team? Because you're right, Drew, I mean, the Capitals were in control of that game, and you know, the unfortunate part for Ovechkin is that Ovechkin just, he isn't hard enough on the puck, and he tries to make a cute little play between his legs, and, you know, you just can't do that when Sidney Crosby is behind you, but Ovechkin was great in that game. He made a great pass. Evgeny Kuznetsov scored a beautiful goal, and then Ovechkin scored the go-ahead goal, the second goal for the Capitals. So Ovechkin was great offensively throughout that game, but what we're seeing are the shortcomings that we've talked about throughout Ovechkin's career, is that he's not sharp enough defensively. He doesn't pay attention to those details, as opposed to Crosby, who does pay attention to those details in his game. So, you know, the Capitals were exposed in Game 1, and especially without Malkin and without Hagelin, two-thirds of your second line out of the lineup. I mean, the Capitals have to take advantage of that.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, Dave. I mean, this had all the makings of a victory for the Capitals. You have no Malkin, no Hagelin, 2-0 lead. Got to be demoralizing to lose that game one, and you wonder if, you know, how easily, you know, the thoughts are going to creep back into their head of, okay, here we go again. We're the Capitals who can't get over the hump that is the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Yeah, no, and there's no question. The fact is that if you're the Pittsburgh Penguins and you lose that game, then that's what you point to. You say, look, we're missing critical players, and you know, hence the reason why we weren't able to overcome the Washington Capitals in game one. Now, if you're the Pittsburgh Penguins, you're sitting there going, well, we overcame them without these two critical pieces. Just what happens when they do come back? So, and if you're the Washington Capitals, conversely, you're sitting there going, what an opportunity missed to have a lead like that in the game, blow it, and lose the game. And again, you don't know what the story, we don't know the status as to whether those guys will be back 100%. But the fact is, once they are back, just how much more dynamic does this Pittsburgh team become? And just how much more of a problem is it mentally, not even necessarily in the physical talent level, but just mentally for Washington when you're going up against this, you know, the two-time defending champion. And look, Pittsburgh just doesn't look like they're bothered by anything right now. I mean, they just look like they're firing on all cylinders. And even if they aren't, they're still getting the wins. And that's really what's important. Peter Laviolette talked about it yesterday.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter how good your team looks. As long as you, at this time of the year, you'd rather have the W.
Yeah.
And that's really what is critical for a team. It doesn't matter stylistically. There's no points awarded for that. The reality is you need a W beside your name at the end of the game.
Yeah, absolutely right. The final series that gets underway this afternoon is the Tampa Bay Lightning and the Boston Bruins. The Lightning dispatched the Devils, you know, relatively easily in five games. The Bruins took 7 against the Leafs, a game where they were down entering the third period. And, of course, they fought back and the Leafs collapsed. We'll talk about next segment. How do you see the Lightning and the Bruins play out? Everyone expected this to be the Atlantic Division final. It's proven to be the Atlantic Division final. But if you're the Lightning right now, you have to sort of be happy where you are. You're rested. You're healthy. And that Bruins team looked like they had some warts on them after that 7-game series against the Leafs.
Yeah, I would agree with that, Drew. I mean, the Bruins had much more difficulty with the Toronto Maple Leafs than the Lightning did with the Devils. And I mean, you talk about, you know, great scoring lines, forward lines, and we know that Tampa Bay's top line of Stamkos, Kucherov, and JT Miller has been great all year. And then we know that the Bruins' top line of Pasternak, Bergeron, and Marchand is one of the best top lines. And you know, there's no shortage of offense in the series. And you know, maybe where the Lightning have the advantages on defense, and you know, a guy like Ryan McDonough being acquired prior to the trade deadline, I think is going to factor in big time. And, you know, you're able to put out Braden Coburn and Mikhail Sergachev as your third D pairing. Mm-hmm. Aside from the Nashville Predators, I don't think any team has more defensive depth than the Lightning. And, you know, I just love this Lightning team. And I think the Bruins are going to be in tough against this Lightning team. They're going to, I think, really exposed certain areas where the Bruins have struggled in that first-round series against the Leafs. So, you know, you talk about that second line, Braden Point, Andre Palat, Tyler Johnson. I imagine that if the Lightning have their way and John Cooper is able to put that second line of Braden Point up against the Pastrnak line, that's probably what he's – Bergeron, Pastrnak, and Marchand, that's probably what he's going to want to get out there. That's the shutdown line for the Tampa Bay Lightning. But these two teams are evenly matched. I personally think the Lightning are going to win this series. I think the Lightning are deeper than the Bruins. But the Bruins, I mean, you're able to put a guy like David Backes on the third line. I mean, they have a lot of scoring depth as well. But I think if you want to look for an advantage, I think, you know, the Lightning are just a little bit deeper than the Bruins.
Dave, do you think the Lightning were, you know, I saw some prognosticators saying that the Lightning were going to have trouble with the Devils, given that the Lightning sort of coasted into the playoffs and the Devils have been playing well at the end
and
of the year.
And the Devils were successful against the Lightning.
And the Devils
in the
have
regular
been
season.
Successful against the
that
Lightning.
That obviously doesn't mean much.
Right. So do you think the Lightning maybe felt a little disrespected entering that first round series, and now this is a team that's back at, you know, firing at all cylinders and was the dominant team that we saw through the first half or three quarters of the regular season?
I think it's the Tampa Bay team that knows how good they are and doesn't really worry about the outside noise, to be honest with you. I think that they're, you know, a lot of teams say they don't, and you know that they still get impacted. They read, I mean, again, so many guys say, oh, we don't read this, we don't read your guys' stuff, we don't listen to you, but we know that's not true. We know, especially with social media, a lot of these guys do pay attention. I don't know, this Tampa Bay team just seems like they've just been in cruise control since pretty much the beginning of the season, and they know how good a team they are. I just don't think they're allowing a lot of things to phase them right now. So I don't know that they would be necessarily, I'm not saying they don't hear it. I just don't know that it's they're allowing it to really bother them. And I just think they know how good their team is. I think John Cooper's an excellent coach. I think he's got them believing that they have a team that can win the Stanley Cup championship. And to me, they're a team that's just, like I said, they're in cruise control. I think that, I thought the Bruins would be a really tough out for Tampa, and I'm not suggesting that they'll be an easy one, but I think that based on how the first round went, I think Tampa will dispatch Boston a little bit easier than I anticipated.
And Dave, there's a really good chance that special teams determine this series, right? Because these two teams are really evenly matched. Like, when I was looking at the series, I was thinking, okay, probably Lightning in six, Lightning in seven, but with how good these two teams are offensively and defensively, that's what it could come down to. It could come down to whose power play is clicking better at any point in this series, right? I would be shocked if this series doesn't go six or seven games.
When we come back, we do our post-mortem on the Toronto Maple Leafs season. They lost in seven games to the Boston Bruins. We talk about where the Leafs go from here, and is there upheaval in the Toronto Maple Leafs dressing room between Mike Babcock and Austin Matthews. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
Do you have any thoughts on Lloyd Jake? Is it mental? Or do you not feel physically right? Or both?
There's no really explanation. Felt fine, and just seemed like everything I was doing ended up in the back of the net. And yeah.
Jake Gardner. I know plus minus doesn't mean much, but when you're a minus five in game seven, it might mean something.
And I think the people that are attacking Jake Gardner, it's absolutely ridiculous.
Well, I mean, he didn't play well, but nobody should be attacked because they didn't play well.
Exactly.
They should be critiqued, and
He had a bad game. Maybe he didn't have the best series, but the reason why they lost the series was not all on Jake Gardner.
No, he had a bad game seven and a bad opportunity, but Freddie Anderson had a bad game seven at a bad time as well. So, I mean, nobody should ever be attacked. They should be critiqued. You can be fair with your criticism, but to personally attack somebody is beyond the pale, certainly. This segment of the show brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight at Rumors, he's been playing to packed crowds all week long. Chris Locke in town, two shows tonight, 7:15 And then again at 10 p.m. Starting next week at Rumors, Drew Lynch from America's Got Talent is going to be in town. And remember, anytime a playoff game goes to overtime, that means it's time for the hashtag ICOT Pool, brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For more information, be sure to follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can follow Rumors on Twitter as well, at Rumors Comedy. More information about the ICOT Pool will be there if a game ever goes to overtime again, which has been very disappointing, I must say.
Still waiting for my tickets.
You're still going to be waiting for a long time.
No, I won tickets to Donnell Rollins.
Oh.
On Instagram.
Yeah, you're not eligible to win things, though.
No, I won it. I got to talk to Tyler.
Okay, you talk to Tyler, and then he'll say, who are you and what are you doing here, and please get out. That would be at least how I would approach the situation. In any event, Donnell Rawlings is coming to Rumors as well. Tickets available, rumorscomedyclub.com.
Saw Donnell Rawlings a few years back with Michael Remus.
Yeah, hot date.
Remo.
Yeah, hot date.
And he was great.
Yeah, Remo or Donnell Rawlings?
Yeah, both.
Oh, okay. Well, it's good to know that Remus is, you had a nice time with Remus that night. Toronto Maple Leafs, they lose game 7.
Yep.
I'm actually surprised we're here to talk, because I figured the world would end.
I think the Leafs are going to win Game 8, though.
I had somebody who was on a plane to Toronto as the Game 7 was going on say to me, he hopes the Leafs lose, because if he lands in Toronto and finds out they win, he's just turning around and coming right back to Winnipeg, because he won't be able to handle Toronto with them victorious, which I can understand to some degree. But Toronto, they lose in the third period. They had a lead. They choke it away. Jake Gardiner, a lousy game. The Leafs are exposed as being a team without the necessary defense to make to be a legitimate Stanley Cup contender. Agree or disagree with that statement?
Yeah, I agree with it, but I also just think the Boston Bruins are a better hockey team, flat out.
Sure.
I think they're better in every area, quite frankly. And I'm not saying that the Leafs aren't a good hockey team. I'm just saying that...
We had a power surge in the studio.
We were off air for a second.
Okay. Are we still on air?
Yes.
Okay.
Hold on. What just happened?
Well, hold on. If you think about it, it does somewhat coincide with my talk about the world ending. I did just say, the world didn't come to an end then, but it looked like it just about came to an end now.
All of the lights just shut off. All of the TVs shut off.
Yeah.
And I've been guilty of inadvertently kicking a power source once or twice before, which usually could knock out our computers. But I know I wasn't doing anything that time. And then all of a sudden.
This is awesome.
Yeah. The power is slowly being rebooted here in the studio. We hope you're still with us. We're not 100%
sure. No, now I can tell. You can tell based on the volume of our conversation.
Okay. And now we have TVs
really
playing.
Loud TV.
I think the studio is... Honestly, the studio might be possessed happening.
Is this an episode of Stranger Things?
I don't know. I've never watched Stranger Things.
Yeah, I don't know, but I don't understand the reference either, but I think it is.
Dave,
yeah.
I don't even remember what I was talking about. All I know is that in mid-thought, everything in this studio just shut down.
I think it was a sign from God as he stopped your thought.
Okay, I think we're good now. Are we good?
Rory,
we're good?
We're getting the point.
Yeah, Rory's saying we're good here.
Rory's maybe giving...
We lost our recording,
so this might affect the podcast, but Rory's giving us a thumbs up.
The truth is, you know, people may not be that interested in the Leafs. We'll see.
So the Leafs, you were talking about how the Bruins are the better of the two teams.
Yeah, I really do believe that. And, you know, I wouldn't say that the Bruins are necessarily way better than the Leafs, but, I mean, let's get back to the Leafs here and what's wrong with the Leafs. First off, Auston Matthews was not great in that series. I mean, let's be honest. He wasn't. He had, what, a goal and an assist in 7 games?
Yeah.
I mean, they need more from their best center. So, Freddie Anderson was great. Maybe he wasn't great in Game 7, but, you know, we talked to Michael Tracos about it about an hour and a half ago, and, you know, this Leafs team sorely needs a top, I think, top 2 defenseman. Forget top 4 defenseman. And, Dave, I realize that Timothy Liljegren is playing really well for the Toronto Marlies in the American Hockey League right now. And, you know, Timothy Liljegren is a guy that's, you know, going to add to their depth. Mm-hmm. Travis Dermott was playing on their third pair. I actually really like Travis Dermott, former teammate of Connor McDavid for the Erie Otters. I mean, he's a good defenseman, but you look at Ron Hainsey, this is probably, if it's not his last year in the NHL, it's one of his last years. What is he, 37 years old right now?
Something like that.
And, you know, Roman Polak, I mean, he's at best a seventh defenseman. So, I mean, the Leafs have to get aggressive here. Michael Tracos threw out Noah Hanifin, for example. You know, maybe you have to move William Nylander. Maybe you have to move Mitch Marner. They need to acquire a top 2 defenseman, because Morgan Rielly, to me, is a top pairing defenseman. But they need to add to that. They just aren't good enough defensively right now.
Dave, what do you make of the supposed rift between Auston Matthews and Mike Babcock? And is Babcock too stubborn in how he deploys his younger players, let's say? Should a guy like Matthews have to, I mean, obviously he has to earn his playing time and he has to perform when given the time, but is Babcock too hesitant and too reticent to put, you know, his best offensive player in a situation to succeed?
You know what? Look, the fact is that coaches are there to coach. They're not there to be your best friend. And at the same time, you want to make sure that your player is happy. So it's a very fine line these guys have to walk in terms of massaging egos, making sure that your best player knows that he's your best player, that he's going to get the time that he requires. And again, it's sometimes it's a bit of an older school way of thinking versus, you know, that you're not going to hand something to someone just because they have the most talent necessarily. Sometimes that factors into things versus whether the guy who has the most talent is always necessarily getting the prime minutes, i.e. that, you know, and Michael Tracos talked about this, about Austin Matthews' power play time and whether he didn't have enough of it. But at the same time, like I said, you know, and it's interesting, in the exit meetings, they talked about how he'd like to play with Marner, and you know, but he doesn't make those decisions.
Mm-hmm.
I would have to think that there's going to be a lot more opportunities for Austin Matthews next year. And there were some suggestions from folks on Twitter that I saw that they think he was playing with some sort of injury.
Sure.
Throughout the playoffs based on maybe his usage and in terms of his overall performance.
And, you know, guys, you talk about the defense. You know, I mentioned Ron Hainsey. He's actually got 1 year left on his contract thanks to cap friendly, but there are changes coming for the Toronto Maple Leafs. I mean, we know that JVR is a pending UFA. He's probably not coming back, Drew. Let's
be honest. They can't afford him.
Tyler Bozak, there's a chance he doesn't come back.
Yeah.
Even though he said he loves Toronto and he would come back. Thomas Plekanec, you know, 35 years old. They brought him in to be a depth center.
Mm-hmm.
There's a good chance he doesn't come back. Yeah. Leo Komarov, I mean, he's a pending UFA. There is a chance that you bring him back, but the point is, Brendan Shanahan and Lou Lamoriello, they're going to have to be aggressive in the trade market prior to the draft. They're going to have to be aggressive in free agency. I mean, you know, everybody's talking about, you know, should the Leafs go after Erik Karlsson, or, you know, should they go after, you know, one of these type of elite defensemen. I don't know if that's going to happen, or Drew Doughty. I mean, I think personally Drew Doughty is staying in Los Angeles, but when you talk about, you know, this team, I mean, it's not just the defense. I mean, they probably have to bring in a backup goaltender. I mean, Curtis McElhinney, I mean, he's done a nice job there, but I think they could probably use someone to push Freddie Anderson. Freddie Anderson is obviously your guy there, but, I mean, they need to address...
To take the pressure off Freddie Anderson to some extent.
Absolutely. I don't know if they want Freddie Anderson necessarily playing that much. He played, I think, the most in the league this year.
Let me read this quote. It's from Nick Kiprios after the Leafs lost to the Bruins. Last year and going to this year, Matthews was the guy, and toward the end, Mike Babcock lost Austin Matthews. I don't know what happened, but he lost him, and there was no trust anymore. And then Austin Matthews can't start a hockey game, and he can't start a period, and he can't start a power play off a TV timeout, and for whatever reason, Babcock lost Matthews, and that played a key part. Is it incumbent on Mike Babcock to, you know, to have trust in Austin Matthews, given that Matthews is the best player on the Toronto Maple Leafs?
Hellebuck actually played the most games in the league this year.
Okay.
Freddie Anderson was second.
Okay.
66 games played. Hellebuck had 67 games played.
Duly noted. Mike Babcock and Austin Matthews. Does he distrust Austin Matthews, and did that play a role in this?
I have no idea. I mean, I don't have the answer to that, but I'll tell you this much. Austin Matthews' response to that question.
Yeah.
I mean, you read into it a little bit. I mean, that wasn't a very that probably isn't the answer you want to hear if you're a Leafs fan.
He didn't do anything to pour water on the situation, pour cold water and make it seem like all was hunky-dory between player and coach.
Well, and Dave mentioned Michael Tracos' comments when we had him on. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, Matthews, his power play time should be increased. I mean, he's the most talented player on the team. I think he should be named captain. The Leafs didn't have a captain this year. I mean, he is the captain of this team. I mean, they're going to build the franchise around him. I mean, they can re-sign him July 1st. They can sign him to an extension, and you better believe they're going to sign him to an 8-year contract.
You would absolutely think so. There's no question about that. You would think that would be the case.
So I have no idea if there's, you know, disharmony between Austin Matthews and Mike Babcock right now, Dave, but during the first round series against the Boston Bruins, I mean, Austin Matthews, it didn't seem like he was himself.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, Ezzy. That's what I was saying earlier. To me, that just something what seemed off with his play. And again, whether that was attributable to an injury, I really don't think he's going to allow something like a rift or something like that would impact his play on the ice. So to me, that's more a function of just perhaps some sort of, I don't know, a malaise.
A malaise. Very well done, Dave Minuke. When we come back, the Moose have Game 5 on Monday night in Grand Rapids. We talk about the Moose-Grand Rapids-Griffin series. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
8 seconds remaining. Fans counting it down here in anticipation of a series-deciding Game 5 coming up on Monday night. And there is the final second off the clock. And the horn sounds, as well as the victory horn here in Grand Rapids. Clutch performance from the veteran Griffins as they're able to blank the Manitoba Moose 3-0 tonight at Van Andel Arena, nodding the series at 2 games apiece.
They're going the distance between the Moose and the Griffins. Game 5, Monday night, 5:45 p.m. with the pregame show, 6 p.m., Mitch Peacock. Pardon me, has the call of Game 5 between the Griffins and the Moose.
You have a tickle in your throat?
I had a little tickle in my throat there, I got to say. I apologize for that little tickle.
That would never happen to Mitch Peacock.
That would never happen to Mitch Peacock. He's far more of a professional than I am, that's for sure. A couple good tweets got to read before we talk about the Moose Grand Rapids Griffins. Casey at the Bat says, "It may not count as a marathon, but the IC Hockey Podcast has got me through multiple long and arduous treks to the beer fridge. We salute you, Casey, and your alcoholism."
Well, he's going to love to hear this, the second part of the podcast. Oh, wait. There was a power outage.
The power surge that powers us through to the final segment on this Saturday morning.
I always knew it was going to be our show that took TSN 1290 down.
Exactly. You thought it would be something we'd say on air. Instead, it was just a power surge that did it instead.
Some people thought it was going to be the big show, but nope, it's us.
Yeah, you always had your fingers crossed. Attaboy, as we had faith in you, buddy. The Moose and the Griffins, Dave, you've been following this series as close as anybody in the city of Winnipeg. The Moose started off strong. They got the victory, was at last Saturday afternoon at home to take a 1-0 series lead. Griffins come back, tie it up at 1. Moose take game 3. Griffins take game 4. This is a Moose team that's been shorthanded, playing with some suspensions. Michael Spacek, a key member of the team, suspended for 3 games earlier in the series. So to your overwhelming thoughts, your overall thoughts on the series as it goes 5 Monday night back in Grand Rapids.
Yeah, no, it's been a good series. I mean, the Moose are definitely playing shorthanded. They lost Mason Appleton, who was left in Winnipeg after game 2. Coach Vincent hasn't said it's a concussion, but you have to believe it was based on the way the hit went by Colin Campbell. I have to think it was a concussion to Mason Appleton. I mean, he played the rest of the game, but he just didn't look right. And didn't make the trip with the team for games 3, 4, and 5. So that's a huge loss when you lose your top scorer. And then Buddy Robinson was in that same game, took out Axel Holmstrom. I didn't really see the play in which it happened. And of course, we haven't seen a replay, but you know, I've heard that it wasn't necessarily a good hit. And obviously the AHL felt similarly because they gave him a 2-game suspension. So he missed games 3 and 4 as well. He'll be back for the 5th game on Monday night. And then they lose, Michael Spacek, who in the first period of the game, game three, he was leaving the penalty box. Grand Rapids had just scored to make it a 2-1 game for the Moose, and there was a melee that kind of broke out right after, and the penalty box door opened, and Spacek joined the fray. So for him, the AHL gave him, and it was funny because I was looking at the AHL rules. From what I could see, they say generally it's a 6-game suspension, so I don't know why they mitigated it, but
sort of like leaving the bench to join a fight.
Yeah, they called it leaving the penalty. They call it leaving the penalty bench, and essentially he got it like I said, he got a 3-game suspension, which is now, you know, in effect for at least this will be the second game on Monday for him. He's hoping that the series extends into the second round, so he just misses the first game of the second round. Otherwise, obviously, it'll just go till next year. But you know what? It's a good series. It's been Grand Rapids is a very good team. They're a veteran team. The Moose, to me, had a power surge in that third game. I was not expecting
The one that took out our
kind of like the one that took out our studio today. Yeah. And that was a really great performance. I mean, they're a very good road team, and that to me was like the difference. You know, you see, they've got to win 2 of 3 on the road against a very good, you know, the defending Calder Cup champion Griffins, who are a veteran laden team. To me, that's a tall task, but at the same time, this is a Moose team that's really kind of been able to kind of rise to the occasion, especially when they're down.
And like you said, Dave, you know, with no Michael Spacek and no Mason Appleton, that's why they're going to rely on good friend of the show, Chase DeLeo, who had 4 points in game three. Nick Pétain, he's been really good in this series.
What's the key for the Moose to win game five against the Griffins on Monday night, Dave?
Number one would be discipline. You absolutely have to stay disciplined. You can't take penalties. They've been burnt too many times in this series on the power play by Grand Rapids. Their PK used to be very good. It was in the top five. Now it's about 15th in the league. So to me, that's the number one thing they have to do. Eric Comrie has been very good. There was a, you know, I mean, that fourth game, there was a, it was the, for the first 40 minutes of the game, it was extremely tight. Grand Rapids scored two goals in the final minute 35 of the second period. Otherwise, it was a 0-0 game. So to me, Eric Comrie and staying disciplined, the Moose have sufficient weapons to score. I don't know for a fact that Mason Appleton won't play because, you know, we haven't gotten an update from the coach. So it's possible if he was feeling well and passed, again, I don't have confirmation that it was a concussion. But if he's sufficiently cleared by the medical staff, it's in theory he could travel to Grand Rapids on his own and play for them on Monday night.
It'll be an interesting game five Monday night, the Moose and the Grand Rapids Griffins, winner takes all. That's it for this Saturday edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. One quick note from Nashville Predators practice. Austin Watson, who left the game last night, is on the ice for the Predators right now as they begin practice. Stay tuned to IllegalCurve.com for all the latest news from Jets and Predators practice today in Nashville. A big thank you to our guest, Chris Mason. We were also joined by Michael Trakos, former Winnipeg Jets player Darren Shannon, and Sean Mullen, Swift Current Broncos broadcaster. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jersey. Support them, because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. For producer Rory, doing a great job behind the board. For Dave Manuk, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290.
As long as you said the team will be all right.